Authentic Wellness Radio.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, everyone. It's episode number 43 of Authentic Wellness Radio. Today, we're talking about weight loss tips from the pros. Now, I've gone to my upcoming Child Obesity Project event, archives of all the interviews that were done there, which incidentally starts tomorrow morning, which will be Tuesday if you're in Australia like me, or Monday if you're in America and most other parts of the world, I believe. You can register for that at thechildobesityproject.com. But today what I've gone and done for you is pull out my favorite, I think I've got about 12 little clips and tips from the world-leading experts that were so generous in giving me their time at the Child Obesity Project. And I thought we'd go through those today for all of you who are thinking that losing weight before summer or around this time of the year would be something that you'd like to do. But first of all, I know that probably a lot of you are quite familiar with this show, and usually what I do is I bring on some absolute leading expert in their field, someone who's very well credentialed and is well known around the world. Unfortunately, today I don't have anyone like that, so what I've gone and done to make you all feel a little bit more comfortable is put together a bio on myself. So my name is David White, Professor David White. I am a 16-time New York Times best-selling author, the Dean of Medicine at Royal North Shore Hospital in Sydney. I'm a 19-time Health Professional of the Year. I hold the Guinness World Record for longest plank of all time, which I believe went for about 14 weeks. World record holder for the 100-meter sprint, which I did in 3 seconds, although to be fair, I did find a shortcut and cheat. And the one that I'm most proud of, I was voted most likely to need to fake my credentials by a community of my peers upon graduation from high school. So I'm here today to run you through the weight loss tips from the absolute best in the world. Now, the first one I wanted to share with you is a little clip from a gentleman called Mark David, who is the founder of the Institute for the Psychology of Eating. And when we were talking about weight loss, he brought up something very interesting, which was antibiotics. And this is something that's not really considered. In fact, most people around the world are taught, wrongly, that losing weight is merely a function of eating less and exercising a little bit more. But in fact, there's quite a lot more to it than that. So I will step out of the way and let Mr. Mark David do his thing and do what he does best and talk us through this unconsidered factor in obesity.
You know, I'm going to mention antibiotic use. Right now, the medical profession prescribes antibiotics as if it is candy. It is, you know, most humans have become so resistant to the various strains of antibiotics that we're given because the bacteria are getting more resistant. Antibiotics it should be a highly targeted prescription drug. It's very effective to knocking out certain bacteria. It's extremely effective to really distorting and harming your gut microbiome. The healthy bacteria, the hottest area of nutritional research right now, and I'm talking about traditional nutrition research, traditional research in the field of digestive physiology, the hottest research is around the gut microbiome and how different strains of bacteria are impacting different aspects of health, of physiology. Now, when we are harming our gut bacteria by continuously using antibiotics, we're finding out that that's impacting weight. In addition, we are doing an experiment on this planet where we are medicating our children, I'm sorry, with a lot of prescription drugs. We're giving them medications for ADD, ADHD. We're giving them medications to bring them down. Our children are being over-medicated. I have never met a human being that has a deficiency in Prozac, that has a deficiency in Prilosec. It's we are living out of balance right now. The pharmaceutical industry has us hooked. And there are ways and pathways that is impacting health and certainly impacting weight. We haven't quite nailed it down yet. But if your eyes are opening and you're watching these things, and if you're a clinician working at the front lines and seeing patients, seeing clients, you know that this is happening. You just have to watch the world. And then you watch what happens when you take a family and you begin to give them a more natural diet and a more natural lifestyle. Good things start to happen.
Oh, yes, they do. I love listening to Mark David talk. And he reminded me of something that that came up in conversation when I was talking to Joel Salatin, who's one of the best natural farmers in the world. I think it was about this time last year when I spoke to him, and he said, listen, David, we feed antibiotics to cows and chickens and all different kinds of animals in the agricultural world. When he says we, he means, of course, commercial farmers, not himself. But he said, we don't do that because they're actually sick. People get paid when they sell animals based on the weight of the animal, and we don't give them antibiotics to bring their weight down. We give them antibiotics to bring their weight up. And I believe Doug Kaufman said something similar when he was giving his presentation at the Female Hormone Solution. He said, antibiotics are basically made to fatten us up. And yes, obviously they do a medical role and there's a time and place for them, but doctors really hand them out like candy these days, and it's a bit of a shame. And I really enjoy the fact that Mark there spoke about over-medicating people, because a lot of times we do look to the medical world for help in areas like trying to lose weight. And as he said, we don't have a deficiency in any particular medicine when we're overweight. It's just purely our lifestyles are out of balance. And that's what this show is all about, is just bringing people back into balance so that we can live healthily. And I've said it a million times before, and I'll say it again, it's very difficult to get healthy and still be overweight. Now, the next clip I wanted to share with you was from another friend of mine called JJ Virgin, who I'm sure you've all heard of. And JJ spoke to us about something that is also commonly misunderstood when it comes to trying to lose weight, and that is food intolerances. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we've all been taught exercising more and eating less is the key to losing weight, but as JJ says, that's not necessarily true. So I'll hand it over to JJ, and the question posed to her is, how do food intolerances and the resulting inflammation that it causes actually make us gain weight?
There's a couple different ways that it does. Number one, remember, when you've got inflammation, it's really interesting because more inflammation creates more weight gain, and more weight gain creates more inflammation. And then it becomes, you don't know which is the chicken or the egg that comes first. But when you have an inflammatory response, you're going to have issues with cortisol and insulin. When you have issues with cortisol and insulin, you're going to have a weight gain. So you've got that piece of it. But then also, it's going to mess with your appetite and your cravings. And, you know, it's really hard to outrun that level of cravings when a food intolerance is making you want that piece of bread or that cheese. It's like you can't get over it. So you've got the cravings and the hormones and the inflammation all going together. Plus, it's tweaking your gut microbiome. And I think probably the most interesting thing that we've got going in both overall immune health and weight is looking at the gut microbiome, because if you have too much bad bacteria, if you have not been really building a strong, healthy gut microbiome with lots of good bacteria, too much of the bad bacteria actually extracts more calories from the food you eat and stores them as fat. So you can gain weight eating very little. And I've seen this in some of my clients.
Oh yeah, massive truth bomb. And it's just for everyone out there who's listening, the five foods that JJ identified as being, or that we're most likely to be intolerant to, were corn, wheat, dairy, eggs, and soy. And I love the fact that she spoke about cravings there, because usually we have cravings to foods or foods that have some ingredient that we're intolerant to, and it makes it very, very difficult to lose weight when you have cravings that are really, really intense. And I know that firsthand. And another pair of speakers that I had on the Child Obesity Project to directly address this issue of cravings and just feeling like you're not in control of what you want to eat with Jason and Mira Cowden, because they spoke about something that's very, very rarely mentioned but hugely important, which was the role of micronutrients in our body. Now, they say there are two types of hunger that we'll experience. So the question that I posed to them was, what's this hidden hunger that you guys talk about?
You know, this is, you know, I'm so happy that you asked this. Yay. This is really where the conversation needs to go with obesity now. And so, you know, most people, they think that obesity is a simple equation. You eat too much food, you gain weight, you become obese, you want to take care of that and lose weight, just eat less food and exercise more. This is the basic concept, which is completely wrong in our opinion. So there's two forms of hunger, and this really stems back to our ancestors. Remember at the beginning of this conversation, we talked about food having two basic components. You brought this up. It's got the macronutrient side, carbs, fats, proteins, and that's the caloric side of food. And then it's got the micronutrient side, right? The vitamins, minerals, essential fatty acids, and amino acids. So in our past, when we ate large amounts of food, we would also get with them large amounts of micronutrients. And the body is designed to be able to tell when both of those are being, the quantities are being met. So we need enough calories to give us the energy to go out and do the work and do the things that we need. And we need the micronutrients to run the body and increase the immune system and build the bones and the muscle tissue and all the things that it does. So today, we have two forms of hunger now. We've got hunger where if we don't eat enough food, we get the stomach grumbling, and we all know that form of hunger, and that can be cured simply by eating food. But the second form of hunger is called hidden hunger. And this is the form, this is the hunger epidemic that we're all in right now. So we're eating plenty of calories, many of us, in America and in Australia and in Europe, but what we're not getting are those micronutrients. And so we have a physiological response to that. Our bodies are actually set up to stimulate us to go get more food, to find that food and eat and eat and eat until we've reached the minimum micronutrient sufficiency levels. And we need that in order for us to be able to procreate, and we need it for our species to be able to survive. And that's really what we're programmed to do. So it's we all know the reason now why we're eating these micronutrient depleted or naked calories. We're not getting the micronutrients we need. And so this is causing us to overeat. And it really, we believe, is really at the root of what's going on with the obesity epidemic.
Naked calories. What a great term that is. And that's another thing that that they spoke about in their presentation as well, was that we need to eat foods not just to give ourselves energy, but because we need things like vitamins and minerals and all those other cool inbuilt kind of physiological enhancers, I guess you could say, that actually allow us to do things like run around, play, study, work, repair our muscles after a workout. It's hugely important and something that's massively underestimated. Now, let's get on to the child-specific part of this podcast for a second. And if you're out there listening and you don't have any children, stick with me because this is hugely important. But I did speak to Dr. Sarah Ballantyne, who is known as the Paleo Mum, and I wanted to hear from her exactly what it's like to be a child or someone who's looking to lose weight these days in the health industry with the way that it is, and what the general approach is to weight loss and why it's so wrong. And she's going to talk about some things that we've already touched on here, but the question that I wanted to hear from her was, how many children or people do you think there are out there right now who need better guidance and need more help when it comes to their health?
All of them. All of them. Do any of them understand, child obesity in general, but childhood obesity is such a multifactorial condition. There's so many different things that are contributing, and some of them are societal, and then some of them are sort of family, cultural, individual. Some of them are the food system, right? There's so many different things that are contributing. And so you can't point to one thing. You can't point to one thing that's wrong. And if I just change this one thing, but it's human nature to want to distill every problem to one solution. So it's human nature to say, well, if you just give up this food, or if you just start eating this food, you just, right, reduce calories, go outside and exercise more, right? That's what these kids are being told. Right, they're told to go on a diet, not eat McDonald's, and go, be active for 30 to 60 minutes a day, reduce screen time, eat 3 to 4 servings of vegetables a day. I signed the exact same parent survey at the pediatrician's office about healthy habits that every other parent does. And it's too simple, right? It's making it our fault. And while there's certainly choices that we can make to change our situation, we can't make those choices without the education, and we can't do that on an education that's distilling everything to this oversimplified set of rules, right? Eat less, exercise more, drink water, don't drink juice, right? It's these really myopic concepts.
What a good point she brings up. I think we can call that one a truth bomb, that you really can't argue with a PhD trained doctor who's saying that kind of stuff. Now, just to highlight the importance of what she's talking about there and how obesity really is something that just boils down to lifestyle rather than, oh, you're eating too much, or you're eating too much bad food, or you're not moving enough or anything like that. I brought a friend of mine, Jenny Delbridge, who is Czech faculty and the founder of Peak of Wellbeing, to talk about something that's really not considered something that probably no one would really expect to be brought up in a conversation about weight loss, a hormone that maybe many of you have never really considered, and something that probably none of you would have related to weight loss, and it's called melatonin. So Jenny does this a lot better than me. I'll let her take the stage.
I'd like to talk just a little bit about melatonin, because obviously that's a sleep hormone that most people recognize. Now, melatonin actually has so many functions in the body, but in the media and in public knowledge, it's actually known for sleep. So melatonin is actually released by our pineal gland, which is in the brain, for those of you that don't know. And it's actually triggered by darkness. So as the sun comes down and it starts to get dark, you know, then melatonin will be triggered. So straight away, we can start to think, wow, okay, now today we have artificial lighting in our houses, for example. So already sleep is being impaired due to lights being on in the house until, you know, 9, 10 o'clock at night, etc. Children watching TV, children on video games, all these kinds of things, which I'll be going into detail in a second. All of these kinds of things can impact how much and when we release melatonin. Okay, so going back to melatonin, yes, it's our sleep hormone, but it's also responsible for creating brown fat. Okay, and without getting too technical for all of the parents and everyone online today, brown fat is really, really good at helping us to burn calories, so to increase our metabolic rate. So there are many, many studies out there, if you just do a Google search, to really highlight that good, adequate levels of melatonin really, really help weight loss. Okay, just one of the many reasons. So I'm not suggesting for a second that lack of sleep is the only reason for a child being obese, for example, but it certainly is a contributory factor.
I'll take that one step further, actually. Jenny mentioned in her presentation that she'd never seen someone who was overweight who had normal levels of melatonin, and there's a lot more science that goes into this than you might actually think, but our sleep patterns have a huge impact on how much we weigh. We're actually designed to gain a little bit of weight in the summer to help us get through the winter period when presumably there'll be less food, and we're designed to lose weight in winter when there's going to be less food, but we know that there's we biologically know that there's a period of abundance coming up. Now, if you've been a listener to this show for a while, you might know that I'm a huge fan of the Brian Tracy quote, "You are the average of the five people that you hang around with the most, or that you spend the most time around." And I really, truly believe that in every possible way. And if you're a parent with a child who's overweight, or if you've got someone in your family who's overweight, or if you're looking to lose some weight yourself, there are some things that need to be considered around what sort of environment or community or household you've got around you. And I've got Mr. Paul Check, who was the keynote presenter at the Child Obesity Project, here to talk about how obesity is, or being overweight, can be a bit of a wake-up call for people. So in my family, I was the only one who was really overweight, but looking around as a health coach now, I can see, and this is no one's fault, but I can see that there were some habits that we had in our family that weren't as healthy as they possibly could have been. And It's more of a societal thing as well, I believe. My fast food addiction, which I spoke about a couple of weeks ago on the show with Liana, came about because I was trained as a child to see fast food as a reward. And I'm sure you can look around and recognize that today. You take kids to go to McDonald's or something like that once they've played sport on a Saturday or whatever. And for me, given that I was unhappy and unsure and I lacked confidence all the way through school, I needed to reward myself because I didn't feel good doing most things that normal children would do. And of course, I'd been trained to go and look at fast food as a way to get that reward. So here's Paul Check talking about how your family's health can be a bit of a wake-up call for you.
Having overweight children should be a grand wake-up call for any parent immediately. And the parent should be the one that initiate the learning process and using it as an opportunity to grow and develop their whole family and their children. And anytime the parent learns, they're gonna have to change diet and lifestyle factors that are automatically gonna affect the child. And just by being a participant to that, the child's automatically gonna learn and remember, oh, my mom and dad used to let me drink soda pop and eat ice cream, but then they took over managing my diet, and now I have a more strict diet, and we eat organic food, and my whole life changed. And look at me now. Here's pictures of me when I was young. Now you've got something. And this is what the statistics I shared earlier were all about. They were saying these diet and lifestyle factors are notoriously hard to implement. Now, of course they're notoriously hard to implement when every second commercial is selling you something that's toxic and poisonous and promising you things that are unrealistic and shouldn't be allowed to be shown on television all over the world or in newspapers, magazines, or on the radio. So I hope that puts your question into perspective from my perspective.
And of course, Paul doesn't mean that in a cruel way, but I really do believe that, as I said on the podcast last week, that bad things happen for us. And I think there's no better way to take a step back and perhaps not be unkind to yourself, but say, hey, look, things aren't working right now. I'm not particularly happy with where I'm at. And I kind of would like that to change. So that little quote there from Paul really spoke to me. Now onto the nutrition side of things. Joe Rushton, who you may have heard on the show before, who you probably saw at the Female Hormone Solution, joined me to talk about the Rainbow Bridge to Nutrition. And I wanted to hear from her. Yes, we spoke about children, but this could be true for just about anyone. And I see this happening a lot with the clients that I see as a trainer and as a health coach. What would be the absolute worst way nutritionally that someone could start their day if they're wanting to lose weight or maintain a normal body weight? And this is what Joe had to say about that.
You know, the obvious start to the day for most children come in the form of cereals, come in a form of, you know, very extruded processed cereals, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. Or it comes in the form of, you know, toast and Vegemite, or toast and some sort of sugary topping, honey or, you know, jam or something. Nutella, exactly. You know, or it comes in the form of a muffin, or perhaps even when a parent is you know, is trying to make a healthy choice, it can come in the form of some, you know, a bowl of fresh fruit. But unless we understand the importance of having good quality fat and protein, especially the fat, to actually slow down the release of the sugars, then fruit by itself, as much as we think we're making a healthy choice because it's fruit, but fruit by itself is going to destabilize sugar levels, set up cravings, suppress the immune system, cause energy crashes, destabilize mental and emotional function. And before we know it, you know, we're back at that, you know, as you say, behavioral outrage when a child, you know, all of a sudden is really hungry again and you know, turns nasty.
And that can apply to adults as well. I think the word that they use out there on social media is hangry, where you're so hungry that you're just angry. Now, on to something that Joe said a second ago. She talks about fat and the importance of having good fat. Now, this is something that I try and teach people all the time. And it's that fat really turns off the hunger centers in our brain that tell us, hey, you need to go and eat food. Carbohydrates don't hugely do that. Of course, carbohydrates are important, but it's fat that will actually tell our brains, hey, we're full. And she mentioned that fat will slow down sugar. And here's a simple way that I remember the importance of that. I'm sure we've all seen a movie called Mary Poppins, where she sings about a spoonful of sugar helping the medicine go down. Well, sugar actually speeds up the way that things are digested in our system. So think about what that does if you're having caffeine with coffee, or if you're a child having caffeine in a soda drink or something like that. It speeds up how quickly that caffeine goes into your system. And on the flip side, fat slows everything down. So if you were to go, everyone knows that if you go and have a couple of alcoholic beverages and you don't eat, it hits you a lot faster and a lot quicker. Well, if you eat something that's fatty while you're drinking alcohol, it'll slow down the release of alcohol, just like having fat with your carbohydrates or with your sugary drinks or with caffeine or anything like that will slow it down quite a lot, which is hugely important. And it kind of makes sense as well. Thanks to Mary Poppins for giving us that one. Now, of course, losing weight is a hugely emotional and challenging time for people. And I didn't really want to just talk about the practical strategy side of things when it came to weight loss. I really wanted to address the emotional side, because I remember for me, even though I really wasn't a child, I was 18, but trying to lose weight was a huge deal. And it it really encompassed everything. And I understand what people out there who are trying to lose weight are going through. And there, I believe, and this is backed up by a friend of mine, JP, who spoke at the Child Obesity Project, that there are two emotional needs that we all have. And he does a beautiful job of explaining them. So I'll hand it over to JP.
My point of view is kids have two primary basic emotional needs. First is they need to feel protected. You know, if they don't feel protected, they go under a fear response. So emotional need number one is need to feel protected. Emotional need number two, and these emotional beings called children, is they need to feel valued. Now, and we'll get into more of this later on, but when we take just those first two dominant emotional needs, need to feel protected, need to feel valued, when we're looking at a child who suffers from obesity, those two emotional needs are in tremendous jeopardy. They can have deep cracks in them. They can even be shattered. Feeling protected, feeling valued. If the child isn't in a dominant place of feeling protected and valued most of the time, we're not talking about all the time, but most of the time, then there's a real good chance they have emotional devastation inside themselves. And we'll take a look later on. The emotional devastation can be a result of the obesity, or it could be the cause of the obesity, or more challenging yet, they could be both happening at the same time.
What a hugely important point to talk about there. Now, it was a real honor in the production of the Child Obesity Project for me to talk to someone who really was a catalyst for change in my life and helped me turn everything around. And a lot of the stuff that I do as a coach and on this show has come from his wisdom and the lessons that he's taught me about change and transformation and making your life better. And his name is Dr. John DeMartini, and he really is an incredible man. He does over 1,000 interviews a year. One of those was with me, which was amazing. I think he does about 350 live seminars, presentations, speeches, keynote addresses per year as well. He's a man who says his vocation is his vacation, which is, I think, the most amazing thing that that you can go through life believing, which he really does. He never takes a day off, this guy. It's amazing. And he's of the mindset that you should never really have to battle to change or to turn your life into something better. And I'm very inclined to agree. And it's because of this message that he's about to share with us that that I really am on board with what he's got to say. So here's Dr. John.
Well, you have the greatest degree of resiliency to change when you're objective in reasoning, which is automatically spontaneously emerging when you're living by your highest values. That's why I keep going back to values. When you're living by your highest values, you're more adaptable. You're willing to embrace pain and pleasure equally in the pursuit of something that's purposeful and meaningful. But when you're not, because of the amygdala coming online, you want to avoid pain and seek pleasure. So you're more absolute and black and white in your thinking, less resilient, less adaptable, and you need some sort of almost cataclysmic event to get you to change. So you're most resilient to adapt, and you're most reasonable in your thinking to common sense. When you're told of something, you're more likely to apply it if you're doing something that's meaningful in your life. So the first thing to do is to get them to identify what their highest values are, get them to prioritize their life to what is really important to them, link everything that they're doing to that, and they have the greatest resiliency. Now you can sit and reason with them, and whenever you want somebody to change, if you just force it on them like an autocrat, like a dictator, you're not going to get anywhere. You're just going to get resistance. You're going to get disobedience disorder, defiant disorder. But the second you care enough about the child to find out what's really important to the child, the highest values of the child, and ask questions that reveal to them how important eating wisely is to fulfill what's highest on their value, they're very reasonable. But if you try to force it down them without talking in their values, you don't go anywhere. Imagine if somebody comes up to you and tries to sell you something, and they tell you what you need. You need to do this, and you should do this. and they use imperative language and autocratic language and talk down to you, and they don't care about what your needs are. They don't ask you a series of questions to establish what your needs are and to gain rapport, and before they start telling you what you need, you immediately want to just say, you know, bug off, get out of here. I don't want to bug, don't leave me alone. Kids are that way too, and that makes them even more unfulfilled, which makes them want to go eat to compensate for the stress they're under. Learning the art of communicating what you believe will be helpful to the kids in terms of their values is wisdom.
And that, of course, applies to communicating to ourselves what we believe is important as well. I really think that losing weight or changing your life is something that you do for yourself. You don't really have to do it to yourself. Yeah, it can seem difficult to go and quit your cravings or your addictions or change your habits or whatever, but as Dr. John says, if it's what you really value, and he teaches you how to do that in his presentation, then it's not as difficult as it seems. Now, of course, no topic or no discussion about weight loss would be complete without a bit of exercise knowledge brought in. Now, I spoke to Brett Klicker, who actually was voted Fitness Professional of the Year a couple of years ago, about the idea of not exercising and focusing instead on moving. And here's what he had to say about that.
I do think that 100%, I think that for people to make fitness or exercise or just movement, because realize we have a problem of just people not moving. The fact that we don't move as adults, we don't stand up at our desk. I mean, that's some estimates say that contributes up to 40% greater likelihood of early death or disease. Just the fact that we don't move, regardless of exercise, we don't move enough throughout the day. So for someone to key into that, we got to get past this notion that the exercise is sort of this pill for weight loss. You know, think about this. You got pills and you got vitamins. Vitamins you do all the time, you should do every day. They're preventative. They make you feel good every day. A pill, if you have a ripping headache and you can't stand up, you take a pill and you make it go away. Well, everyone sees exercise as this pill for being overweight. Well, I'm overweight, so I have to exercise. Well, we adults share that notion with our kids. So, oh, mommy or daddy, that's why mommy or daddy have to get on the exercise bike because we're fat. You're skinny. You don't have to do that stuff. But I'm fat, so I have to get on the exercise bike. Or, oh, mommy or daddy is fat, so that's why we have to eat this gross food. You can eat whatever you want because you're young and skinny. And we've turned it into this relationship of exercise is this pill we have to take because, well, when we start seeing that exercise is a vitamin, exercise is something that makes us feel good every day. Exercise is something beyond how we look. It's beyond our body weight. When kids can connect with that notion of how they feel after going out to recess. Yeah, that's so important right there. It's not so much, I mean, yes, they're going to be happy that they won whatever game they were playing. And there's all those dynamics that I think winning and losing is important. But at the end of the day, how do they feel after they go do something physical? And to key into the fact that, wow, I just ran around with my friends. I didn't have to go to a sports practice. I didn't have to do this. I just did something physical and I feel awesome. So it's not this pill I have to take because I've been bad. It's not this punishment. When I want to feel awesome, I go and move. Let's not even talk about exercise. Let's say, how can we go and move? So as parents, as educators, as fitness professionals, watch the language. It's important that we really watch the language we use about our relationship with exercise around kids because that's forming their views and their relationship with exercise. So as a parent, you exercise, oh, mommy or daddy, why are you exercising? Because I want energy, because it makes me feel awesome. It's how I have the energy to run around with you all day. You essentially make them think, and look, they do this on cartoons all the time. It makes you superhuman.
We did talk a little bit about Popeye after that and how that was the best show that's ever been made for children because Popeye eats spinach and then he turns into this this Superman, ridiculously strong hero, basically. And that's the kind of message that we should be sending to children, but also to ourselves, is that exercise makes us better. It's not something that we have to do. Just like drinking water and going to bed on time and eating the right kinds of food and doing what we really care about is not something that we have to do to ourselves. It's something that we get to do for ourselves. Now, a couple more quick things that I wanted to cover here because there are a lot of things being said out there on TV, in newspapers, on podcasts, in places where you would expect a certain degree of expert opinion or real science to happen, and it's about how to lose weight by just eating less and exercising more. Now, I'm sure you all know a TV show about losing weight. I had a former contestant on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about her experience, and most people don't know this, but toxicity and having too many chemicals in your system can cause you to gain weight. And if that's the case, which it is for a huge percentage of people, then it's one thing to take the chemicals out of your body, but it's another thing to have to go through a detox first. Because basically what happens if you go and eat a food that's full of chemicals or agricultural farming products or pesticides or preservatives or additives or whatever it might be, the body can't always deal with that, because if you're eating that kind of stuff all the time, your liver's only got so much capability to actually detoxify and get rid of that stuff. And if that liver's, or if your liver's overloaded, then the body says, look, I can't do anything with this toxin. The safest thing for me to do with it right now, instead of pushing it through the liver, is to just wrap it in a fat cell, and I'll deal with it later if and when the liver's ready to. Now, I spoke to Dr. Deanna Minnick, who is a world-leading expert on detoxification, about how this process of ingesting or intaking chemicals can cause us to lose weight, and why we should consider doing a detox before we go and do a weight loss program is so important. And imagine just for a second what would happen if you'd been eating bad food for a number of years like I had, and you just went and threw yourself as hard as you could into burning off fat, which is full of toxins. Imagine what that would do to your liver. And that's why a lot of people on shows like that one that is very popular and common at the moment end up in hospital after they've lost a lot of weight. So here's Dr. Minnick talking about the detox obesity or detox weight loss / weight gain link.
So in the medical literature, what we're seeing now are studies which are examining the role of things like, I'm going to call them POPs, persistent organic pollutants, things like polychlorinated bisphenols, things like bisphenol A. And what we're seeing is that greater elevations of these persistent organic pollutants starts to change our metabolic pathways. And there have even been publications in top-tier medical journals showing that with increased levels of these things in the body, we have increased rates of obesity, type 2 diabetes, and even mortality, even death, that there's an increased association. So I do think about children, because they are so vulnerable. They don't have much control over their environments. So are they in an urban environment or a rural environment? Either one would have these types of exposures. But you can imagine that there'd be so many different toxicants that we would come into contact with that could have potential metabolic effects in the body. And let me just say one quick thing. From a biochemical standpoint, it's not just seeing these associations in literature, but if we look at the pathways as it relates to things like the Krebs cycle, so this is the cycle that helps us to generate energy in the body, what we see is that many of those pathways are in some way influenced by hormones. And you did a whole hormone summit, so you know about this. Now, these toxins jam up, or they change the function of hormones. They actually are hormone lookalikes. So they try to stand in and look like a hormone, and what ends up happening is they make the pathway dysfunctional. So then we start to see that people don't get energized. They start to store energy rather than burn it. So one of the first indications for people to do a detox is typically they're losing energy. I'm gaining weight. I have brain fog. I have low energy. These are some of the top complaints for why people even do a detox to begin with.
Absolutely crucial to do a detox before, or consider doing a detox, I should say, before you embark on any weight loss journey. And Dr. Minnick makes it sound super complicated there. I'm sorry about that. But in her presentation, she did make it a lot more understandable. I mean, I remember learning about the Krebs cycle when I was in university, and I've forgotten the whole thing already. So it's not hugely important to understand those scientific terms, but basically what she's saying there is that chemicals can cause obesity, and you need to deal with the chemical problem before you deal with the fat problem. Now, the second last presentation or little teaser video that I wanted to share with you is from a lady called Cindy O'Meara, who is Australian like me, one of the loveliest people that I've ever met and spoken to in my life. And she wanted to talk about the effect of these chemicals on what's called our microbiome, or all the bacteria that lives in your gut, which is becoming a more trendy topic of nutrition these days. And what the impact of the modern foods that most people are consuming actually is on our gut flora. So here's Cindy dropping some truth bombs.
Well, one of the things that the way we eat right now is that we're killing our microbiome, which is our adaptation. If we have a healthy microbiome, we can usually adapt to natural foods. But we have eaten the same types of foods in their whole state for millions of years, basically, from the beginning of time to now. Now we are eating chemicals made in a laboratory filled with preservatives, flavors, colors, hydrogenated vegetable oils, interesterified vegetable oils, fractionated, pasteurized, homogenized, hydrolyzed, isolated, concentrated. It's just ludicrous that we could change so quickly. And the thing is that it's not, they're not prebiotics, they're not feeding and making our microbiome healthy. They're actually killing our microbiome, which is the thing that helps us digest. And as a result, we will not adapt. We will not adapt to this type of food. We must go back to our foods. But the problem is we are so maladapted right now that even going back to real foods is making people sick. Some people can't eat anything but an elemental formula, which is, I hate to say it, amino acids, not proteins, because they can't digest their proteins. They're synthetic vitamins and minerals and fructose, high fructose corn syrup. But these kids are not thriving on this. All they're doing is surviving.
In fact, they say that there's been a lot of research into the microbiome lately, and I've kind of kept one eye on it, and they say that the bacteria and the bugs in our gut are hugely responsible for what we crave. So throwing out the balance of good bacteria, which crave things like healthy vegetables and meats and whatnot, and replacing them with bad bacteria who love things like sugar and processed foods, makes them tell your brain, hey, go and get me some more sugar, please. So throwing your microbiome out of whack can cause huge, huge cravings. And luckily, as Cindy shared with us, it's not a huge problem to, or it's not a huge world-changing solution to change what's going on in your gut microbiome, but it is definitely doable. Now, the last thing that I wanted to share with you all, because of course, whenever we change our health for the better, or whenever we embark upon any kind of health routine, it's challenging. We're changing our habits. We're doing things that we don't necessarily know how to do. We're not sure of ourselves. Sometimes confidence can be low. And I know I was affected by all these things when I was younger. But I thought I'd like to close today's show, or today's episode, with a message from Dr. John DeMartini to anyone who's listening to this right now, who knows or who believes for themselves that they deserve better than what they've got going on in their life right now. This is a message for the ambitious, hungry, foolish, dreamy, starry-eyed child within ourselves or within our families that lives within us all and really just wants the best for ourselves. And he goes on to talk about parents here for a second, but I'd encourage everyone listening to think about yourself or the child that he talks about as yourself as young and playful and ambitious, and the parent as the adult in us that's grown up and kind of tries to squash the fire out of us. So here's what Dr. John has to say about how to change.
Yeah, I would like to speak to the children for a moment, whatever their age is, and just say to them this, that no matter what you've done or not done, you're worthy of love. And out of working with people of all different ages for the last 43 years, one thing I can state is that every child deep inside loves his parents, and every parent deep inside loves his child. So don't question that. That's a given. They may project their values onto you. It may not do all the things you want, but doesn't mean they don't love you. So never question whether you're loved, because no matter what you've done or not done, you're loved. Then you want to make sure that you prioritize your own life and take command of your own life, because you can't guarantee that anybody in this world is ever dedicated to fulfilling your life except you. And everybody's going to be wanting you to do what fulfills their life. So if you try to fulfill everybody else's life, you lose your own in the process. You want to learn how to fulfill your life in a way that helps other people fulfill theirs. That's the secret. And last, you want to make sure you give yourself permission to do something extraordinary on the planet. because you have deep inside a deep desire to want to go make a difference. Give yourself permission to work and do whatever it takes to fulfill whatever that is that difference you want to make. And don't let anybody on the outside, don't let anybody anywhere interfere with your dream of what you want to do on this planet. Or otherwise, you'll have the whole world against you. A whole world supporting you, but you'll lose your soul. I'd rather have the whole world against me and have my own soul and my own vision and my own inspiration. Because at first, people will ridicule me and maybe even oppose me, but eventually they'll honor me for being authentic. So give yourself permission to be authentic, do what it is that you really feel called to do on this planet, and know that you're loved.
There's really not much I can add to that from Dr. John. It's been such an absolute pleasure putting together this event, the Child Obesity Project. It starts in about 24 hours from when I've released this podcast, which is Monday, the 12th of October, if you're in America. Or if you're east of America in Australia like me, that'll be Tuesday the 13th of October is when you'll be able to, or on the morning of Tuesday, I should say, when you'll be able to access all the presentations. It's totally free. I'd love for everyone to come and join me and learn from the absolute world's best about what it takes to lose weight and change your life. And thank you so much for joining me today. I've really enjoyed sharing these messages with you. It's been about 3 months since I did most of these recordings, and I'm just remembering right now how special some of these people are. So my name is David White, double professor, first man on the moon, inventor of the podcast and iTunes, and I believe that everyone who's listening to this and everyone that you know deserves the absolute best for yourself and for your health, so thank you so much for joining me.
Authentic Wellness Radio.